Padaya, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane, Namaste Sarasvati Deve, Gauravani Pacharani, Nirvasesis and Nivadi Paskutade Satarani, Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta, Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamsha, Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Sri Vishakam Vitamsha. So today is June 22nd in Hillsborough, North Carolina. It's the disappearance day of Vakeshwar Pandit. I'm going to talk a little bit about Vakeshwar Pandit, and then we're going to do Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Text 45, which is about Mother Yasoda seeing the universal form in Krishna's mouth.
Is that microphone?
Yes? Is this better? All right. And Srivastava was so overwhelmed by ecstasy at this class of Devananda Pandit that he started to cry and exhibit various ecstatic symptoms. The other devotees in the class, seeing these symptoms, took Srivastava out. They forced him to leave, that he was causing a disturbance. Devananda Pandit didn't do anything. He didn't say, no, let him stay, leave him alone, why are you doing this? So this was an offense of omission, not of commission. So Devananda Pandit didn't himself commit the offense, but he allowed others to commit the offense in his presence. And because of this, he lost his understanding of the Bhagavatam, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu withdrew his mercy from him. And this is what happens with Vaishnava Aparadha. When we offend devotees, what to speak of a devotee like Srivastava Thakur? But if we offend any devotee, then we lose the mercy of the Lord. We may go on with our service, but it becomes empty. It's compared to a crazy elephant running through a garden and destroying everything. Okay, so fast forward some time later, and Vakeshwar Pandit was involved in a Sankirtan party. And Devananda Pandit heard about that. Vakeshwar Pandit was very famous, and so he wanted to go. So when Devananda Pandit went, Vakeshwar Pandit was dancing and dancing and dancing. And as he was dancing, people were trying to touch his feet and so forth, and Devananda Pandit felt, let me protect him. So he was protecting Vakeshwar Pandit from being harassed by him. And Vakeshwar Pandit, at the end of this time, he was so happy with Devananda Pandit that he said, Krishna Bhakti Hoik, may you attain devotion to Sri Lord Krishna. So Vakeshwar Pandit blessed Devananda Pandit with devotion to Krishna. So after this, when Lord Chaitanya came to Nadia from Jagannath Puri to have darshan of his mother and the river Ganges, he went to Devananda Pandit at Kulia, and he said, because you have served Vakeshwar, I have noticed you. Vakeshwar is fully imbued with the Lord's transcendental energy, and whoever becomes devoted to him attains the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. His heart is the personal abode of Sri Krishna, and as Sri Krishna dances, so Vakeshwar also dances. Wherever one can get the association of Vakeshwar, that place is the sum total of all holy places and is as good as Vaikuntha. So what happened was, because a devotee blessed Devananda Pandit, therefore, even though he had committed an offense, he became free from that offense, and he attained Krishna consciousness. So it's a very interesting story how by offending a devotee we don't know where we're going, and by serving a devotee then we get the mercy of the Lord. Now, Vakeshwar Pandit is also very significant in terms of the process of spontaneous devotion. And we explain this in our classes on Manashiksha, especially in regard to the third verse of Manashiksha, where Raghunath Das Goswami says to take shelter of Swarup Damodar. Swarup Damodar taught the process of spontaneous devotion to two people, Vakeshwar Pandit and Raghunath Das Goswami. The process that was taught to Vakeshwar Pandit, Bhaktivinoda calls the outer path, and the process that was taught to Raghunath Das Goswami he calls the inner path. So Vakeshwar Pandit taught this outer path of spontaneous devotion to Gopal Guru Goswami, and Gopal Guru Goswami taught it to Dhanachandra Goswami. Dhanachandra Goswami then wrote what we call a padati, or a guide to the external practice of spontaneous devotion called Gaura Govinda Archana Smarana Padati. Raghunath Das Goswami wrote a guide to the inner practice of spontaneous devotion, which we've published as Manashiksha. And I don't have time in today's class, because I do want to go on to the verse, to look at the difference between the external path taught by Vakeshwara Pandit and his disciples and the internal path taught by Raghunath Das Goswami. So I was asked by our Devamrita Maharaj, my godbrother Devamrita Maharaj, to write a chapter that he said, if you're going to produce Manashiksha, you must thoroughly research the criticism of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati by the Radhakund Babajis and others as to the practice of spontaneous devotion and include that in the book. So I was like, I'm not qualified to do that. And finally, I just accepted the instruction and I wrote this chapter comparing the difference between the path that Lord Chaitanya gave to Swarup Damodar that was given to Vakeshwara Pandit and the Lord Chaitanya gave to Swarup Damodar that was given to Raghunath Das Goswami. And we received a lot of appreciation from leaders in ISKCON for this chapter. That they felt that it really cleared a lot of the misunderstandings about the practice of spontaneous devotion. Just very, 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 very briefly, Vakeshwara Pandit's path involves about 4 or 5 hours a day of external practices of various mantras and meditations and worships of the residents of Navadvip and the residents of Vrindavan. Whereas Raghunath Das Goswami's path involves internal changes in consciousness without any external display that's different from regulative devotion. So the external path taught by Vakeshwara Pandit in the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was perverted. It was perverted and it was imitated. Oh, we have an empty cup. So because it was both perverted and imitated, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati decided not to have the external path visible in his own Gaudiya Math, except in some very small ways, and to concentrate on teaching the internal path. The internal path cannot be imitated, and it cannot be perverted. It's just simply not possible. But, of course, the internal path, being internal, is invisible. You cannot discern someone practicing the internal path of spontaneous devotion from somebody practicing regulated devotion. There's no external manifestation of it, or very little, only something very subtle. Whereas in the path taught by, given to Vakeshwara Pandit, it's very obvious that one is following a path of spontaneous devotion because one's external activities change quite considerably from that of regulated devotion. So because of that, many devotees will look at ISKCON, look at Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's movement, and say, hey, there's no spontaneous bhakti going on. Everybody's only doing regulated bhakti. And in fact, we find that many times when people leave ISKCON but continue to practice Gaudiya Vaishnavism, one of their reasons for leaving ISKCON is they're saying, I'm looking for the practice of spontaneous devotion. So understanding this difference between the bona fide path given to Vakeshwara Pandit and the bona fide path given to Raghunath Das Goswami will really help us to understand how we are following in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions in Srila Prabhupada's movement. So again, I do want to go into today's verse. I want to go into today's verse basically because Jiva Goswami says that this particular verse in the Bhagavatam is called a Parivasa. It's a supreme verse in the Bhagavatam. So I thought if I have an opportunity to speak on this verse, even though I could easily talk about, we could all easily talk about Vakeshwara Pandit for a week, I really wanted, I was like, okay, I'm not going to lose the opportunity to speak on this particular verse. Okay, so Canto 10, Chapter 8, Lord Krishna sows the universal form, and we're on text 45. Yeah? Trayachopanishadischa.
Trayachopanishadischa.
Sankhya yogaischa sattvatai.
Sankhya yogaischa sattvatai.
Upagiyamana mahatmyam.
Upagiyamana.
Harim samanyata bhajam.
Harim
samanyata.
Traya.
By studying the three Vedas, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva.
By studying the three Vedas, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Upanishadvi cha.
Upanishadvi cha.
And by studying the Vedic knowledge of the Upanishads.
And by studying the Vedic knowledge of the Upanishads.
Sankhya yogai.
Sankhya yogai.
By reading the literature of Sankhya Yoga.
By reading the literature of Sankhya Yoga.
Cha.
Cha.
And. Sattvatai.
Sattvatai.
By the great sages and devotees or by reading Vaishnava Tantra, Panchatantras.
By the great sages and devotees.
Upagiyamana Mahatmyam. Whose glories are worshipped by all these Vedic literatures. Harim. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sa. She. Amanyata. Considered ordinary. Atmajam. As her own son. Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature, yet Mother Yasoda considered that Supreme Person her ordinary child. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, oh, now I got to tell you a funny story about 15:15. So do you all know the verse 15:15? Anybody can chant it? So Krishna says in that verse, I give knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So in our family, whenever we couldn't find something, we would chant that verse. So Krishna would give us knowledge and remembrance of where the lost item was. So anytime anybody lost something, we'd say, 15:15, chant 15:15, and they'd walk around. So when I was in Europe a few months ago, one of the devotees who was helping me, she said, I can't find my phone, I can't find my phone. I said, just chant 15:15. And she goes, 15:15, 15:15, 15:15. So stated in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15 by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the purpose of studying the Vedas is to understand him. Vedasta sarvar amam eva vedya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sanatana Goswami that there are three purposes in the Vedas. One is to understand our relationship with Krishna, Sambandha. Another is to act according to that relationship, Abhideya. And the third is to reach the ultimate goal, Prayojana. The word Prayojana means necessities. And the ultimate necessity is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prema Pum Artho Mahana. The greatest necessity for a human being is the achievement of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here we see that Mother Yasoda is on the highest stage of necessity, for she is completely absorbed in love for Krishna. In the beginning, the Vedic purpose is pursued in three ways, trayi, by karma kanda, jnana karma, and upasana kanda. When one reaches the complete, perfect stage of upasana kanda, one comes to worship Narayana, or Lord Vishnu. When Parvati asked Lord Mahadeva, Lord Shiva, what is the best method of upasana or worship? Lord Shiva answered, Aradhanam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param. Vishnu Pasana or Vishnu Aradhanam, worship of Lord Vishnu, is the highest stage of perfection as realized by Devaki. But here, Mother Yasoda performs no upasana, for she has developed transcendental ecstatic love for Krishna. Therefore, her position is better than that of Devaki. In order to show this, Srila Vyasadeva enunciates this verse, Traya, Chopanishad, etc. When a human being enters into the study of the Vedas to obtain vidya, knowledge, he begins to take part in human civilization. Then he advances further to study the Upanishads and gain Brahma-gyan in personal realization of the Absolute Truth. And then he advances still further to Sankhya Yoga in order to understand the Supreme Controller, who is indicated in the Bhagavad Gita, Padam Brahma, Padam Dhamma, Paditram, Padamam Bhavam, Purusham, Shastratam. When one understands that Purusha, the Supreme Controller, to be Paramatma, one is engaged in the method of yoga, Dana Vastita Tad Gatena Manasa Pasyantiyam Yoginaha. But Mother Yasoda has surpassed all these stages. She has come to the platform of loving Krishna as her beloved child. Therefore, she is accepted to be on the highest stage of spiritual realization. The Absolute Truth is realized in three features, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Subjitam. But she is in such ecstasy that she does not care to understand what is Brahman, what is Paramatma, or what is Bhagavan. Bhagavan is personally descended to become her beloved child. Therefore, there is no comparison to Mother Yasoda's good fortune, as declared by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramya Kachir Upasana Vrajavadu Vargena Ya Kalpita. The Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may be realized in different stages. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:11, Yetamam Prapadjante Tamstatai Babajam Yaham, Mama Bhartamana Bhartante, Manusya Partha Sarvashaha. As men surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. One may be a karmi, a jnani, a yogi, and then a bhakta or prema bhakta, but the ultimate stage of realization is prema bhakti, as actually demonstrated by Mother Yasoda. Chaya chopan ishad bischa sankhya yogaischa satvatai upagiyamana mahatmyam harim sammanyatatmajam. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature, yet Mother Yasoda considered that Supreme Person her ordinary child. So as I said, Jiva Goswami explains that this verse is what's called a parikvasa. Now, basa means language, and pari means the supreme, what's above. So the supreme language, the supreme statement. And he says that as a lamp from one place in a dark room, so that statement in the scriptures, which reveals or regulates the meanings of all scriptures, is a parivasa. So you have one light in the room, it lights up the whole room, so a parivasa statement reveals all the statements of the scriptures. Now this is a parivasa, particularly, Jiva Goswami says, for all of the pastimes related to Aishvarya during the Kumara and Kaishora ages in Mathura, Kurukshetra, and elsewhere. So any time that Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, displays any pastimes of Aishvarya in Vrindavan, in Mathura, in Dwarka, in Kurukshetra, this verse explains and illuminates and regulates all those activities. Everybody understand that? So if Krishna is just displaying some pastime of Madhurya, this is not a parivasa verse. But if Krishna is displaying some pastime of Aishvarya, something of grandeur, something of the Supreme Personality, we say, oh, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's lifting Govardhan Hill. He's killing the Keshi demon. You know, he's dancing on Kali's hood. Something where there's some Aishvarya. Then this is the verse one looks to understand all of those verses, to understand all of those pastimes. So in that way, we're understanding what's called a hermeneutic principle. Hermeneutics is how does one understand and apply scripture. That's a very important principle for us as a devotee, or as aspiring devotee, or someone like me who's aspiring to aspire to be a devotee, because we're trying to take the words of Srila Prabhupada, our acharyas, and the scriptures, and say, well, what does it mean? How do I understand it? How do I apply it to my life? What relevance does it have to me? You know, and sometimes the scriptures appears to say one thing over here, and then it appears to say something contradictory over here. Or Prabhupada says, you know, in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you can fix your mind on any form of the Lord. And then in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he said, don't even divert your attention to any form of the Lord. Just fix your mind on the two-handed form of Krishna playing his flute. And you're like, wait a minute. How do I not divert my attention to any form of the Lord and still observe Nrisimha Chaturdasi and fix my mind on the other? You know, how do I do all this at the same time? So we may have all these kind of questions. Or we may say, well, what instructions in the Shastra is for everybody all the time? And what instructions of the Shastra are a time and place and circumstance? Like I like to give the example where Krishna says, stand and fight. I don't see anybody standing and fighting. So if we're going to say, well, every one of Krishna's instructions is applicable to everyone in all time, places, and circumstances, then all of us are going to have to stand up and fight all the time. There are some people in this country who seem to take that instruction very seriously. But you understand that there's some distinction between what we call transcontextual instruction and a contextual instruction. So therefore, the acharyas have told us these particular verses are a key. To all these set of instructions, if you want to understand them, or all this set of pastimes, there are certain keys that unlock a whole set and make all of these things discernible. So this is one of those verses. And this is the verse is how we understand what is the supreme way of approaching Krishna. Because the Lord is explained in different ways in the Bhagavatam. I mean, here Prabhupada's quoting twice, Brahma Meti, Paramat Meti, Bhagavan Iti, Sabjite. The Lord is also described as a universal form in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita. And even if you're talking about Bhagavan, Bhagavan is described as Varaha, Singha, Kurma, as Rayana, as Vasudeva Krishna in Dwarka, Mathura, as Raj Kumar, Krishna, and Vrindavan? How do we understand all of this? How can we make sense of these? In fact, such was the question of Uttara to Parikshit. She says, I don't understand how the gopis are going to get the same result as Kamsa. Because there are statements like that. That they achieved the same result. She said, I don't understand this. And then Parikshit narrated the Brihad Bhagavatam to all the different realms. All the different gradations. Right? So Jiva Goswami explains in looking at this verse. He says, the Vedas altogether describe Krishna as the Yajna Purusha. The person of sacrifice. By the way, when the word yajna is used and we translate it as sacrifice, that does not mean the general English term like, I'm going to sacrifice my time to help you out. That's not what it means. It means a religious ceremony. Some kinds of I don't like to use the term ritual, but some kind of a ritual, some kind of a ceremony that's done according to certain rules. So the Yajna Purusha, the person of religious ceremony, the person who is supposed to be worshipped by any kind of religious, it doesn't matter, you know, it could be this religion, that religion, but anyone who's trying to worship God and doing some ceremony, he is the person receiving. Bhaktiram Yajna Tapasam. He's receiving the results of all the ceremonies. And the system of Sankhya mentioned here is particularly, Jiva Goswami said, to worship him as the supreme Purusha, the supreme person. Yoga as Paramatma. You can see that Srila Prabhupada's purport here is particularly following this understanding given by Jiva Goswami. You know, he's really following this. And also Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami, they're explaining like this, and Prabhupada's really following this instruction of the Acharyas. And the Pancharatra, or the Sattvata coming from the devotees, is worshipping the Lord as Bhagavan. But Madhya Soda is going beyond Bhagavan. In fact, she's even going beyond, as Prabhupada mentions here, Devaki. When Vasudeva and Devaki see Krishna kill Kamsa, they, our son is God, our son is God, our son is God. They become very reverential. They become a little formal. Right? But we find here Madhya Soda, she's not just seeing Krishna killing Kamsa. She's seeing, I mean, what is she seeing? She's seeing all the planets are inside Krishna's body. She sees herself inside Krishna's body. She's not seeing a vision of herself or a photograph of herself. What is she seeing? I mean, Lord Brahma talks about this when he sees Krishna after stealing the boys and the calves, and he says, I'm inside your belly. Mother Yasoda saw me inside your belly, so I'm there, but yet I seem to be seeing you outside. Nothing like going to a late night program last night. Let me try this again. That's not right. Can someone help me with this verse? Thank you. I shouldn't go to late night programs. Prabhupada said, if you don't have enough sleep, you don't have enough intelligence. So Krishna is in every atom, and yet the whole universe is within Krishna. So if we try to picture this, so if I try to picture in every atom here, in this room, there's Krishna. Okay, I can kind of get that. I get this little picture of Krishna and everything. All right. Then within Krishna is the universe. Okay, I can get that. But wait a minute. Within the universe is every atom that Krishna is within, and the universe is within and Krishna is within. And I can't get that, and my brain goes fizzle. Right? It's achincha. So this is what Mother Yasoda was seeing. She's outside Krishna, looking in his mouth, seeing the universe in his belly, seeing that she was seeing herself seeing outside, inside. But that didn't stop her from Atmaja. Ja is like connected to the word janma, birth. You're born from me. Does that make any sense? Is that a logical understanding? I look in the mouth of my child and I see the universe and I see I'm there and I'm here and there at the same time, and how is that? And Krishna seems to be in one place, but everything, all places and all time, past, present, and future is within him. Oh, but he was born out of my body. That's not logical. It's not what we call tattva. It's rasa. And it's very interesting if we ask the unanswerable question, what's more real? What's more true? Tattva or rasa? Is it more true that Krishna is Yasoda's father? Krishna says, I'm the father of everyone. Well, that would include Yasoda, wouldn't it? Or is it more true that Yasoda is the mother of Krishna? And Krishna says, I'm the father, the mother, the grandfather of everyone. Is he Yasoda's mother or father, or is Yasoda his mother? What's more true? It's an unanswerable question. It depends what your angle. What's more real? And we Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we lean to the side that rasa is more real. That's our leaning. We say that the reality of yoga maya, which in one sense is covering tattva, is in another sense a higher tattva. Well, this is a great mystery, and is one of the main reasons why most of the world is impersonal. Because you start talking about how God's a little boy and he's running around in fear of his mother and he's crying. They're like, what? What? God is God. The majestic, the powerful. You know, when I was a kid, every year we would watch The Wizard of Oz. Family tradition on Thanksgiving. And there was, they go, the great Oz, the powerful, and the behind the curtain is just this guy. So people think of personalism like that. That we're saying, you know, God appears to be powerful and omniscient and omnipotent. But actually he's just this little boy, he gets tied up and he can't go anywhere. You know, he's afraid of his mother punishing him. And so people reject the personal understanding. They say you have some personality, you have some relationship, then it destroys the majesty. And even some of the worshippers of Bhagavan Krishna feel that way. That's why Prabhupada is saying here that Yasoda is higher than the worshipper of Bhagavan. You know, in Vaikuntha, the people who worship Narayana, they don't like the sweet pastimes of Krishna. They actually don't like them. They tell Gopakumara, don't call Vishnu cowherd. He's God. You're calling him a village boy. How can you do that? It's not appropriate. Yeah, he plays like that sometimes to kill demons. But... And the residents of Vrindavan, they say we worship Narayan for the protection of Krishna. So sweet. So this is what we've been given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of course by our Srila Prabhupada. This understanding that Krishna is the supreme form of God. That the most intimate, most sweet is the highest. That it's not that the most majestic form is the highest, the most opulent form is the highest. The sweetest form is the highest. And the sweetness goes to such an extent that the majesty and opulence is forgotten. Just forgotten by the devotees. Madhya Soda doesn't love Krishna because the universe is inside of him. That's not what makes her love him. She loves him just because he's her child. Like, any mother loves her child just because he's her child. It's just what it is. The child can be a criminal and put in jail, and the mother's still, my child.
Why did you do this crime? You're still my child.
Just the way it is. Even among the animal species, you know, the mothers will, they'll die for their children. So that's how Madhisoda is feeling. Atmaja, he's been born from me. I have to feed him. We're saying, Krishna's feeding me. Krishna's taking care of me. We all say that all the time. Krishna's taking care of me. Krishna's feeding me. Krishna's protecting me. Krishna's my shelter. Mother Yasoda's thinking, I'm his shelter. She's saying, without me, Krishna would die. I have to feed him. I have to take care of him. I have to protect him from the demons. I have to chant mantras to protect him. And she's genuinely feeling that way. And Krishna's genuinely feeling that way. Therefore, Kunti, who's also in parental rasa, here we're comparing with Devaki. Kunti says, I don't understand. I just don't understand. You're feared by fear. And you're actually feeling, you're not pretending. It's not like a drama. We were just, oh, I'm pretending to be afraid. You're actually afraid, Mother Yasoda. Krishna's thinking like that, you know? And he gets afraid of the coward boys. Mother, you know, Mother Rohini comes out and says, come home for dinner. And the boy said, if you leave now, we won't play with you tomorrow. And so Krishna goes back. And then only when Mother Yasoda comes and says, if you don't come eat, your father won't eat. He's waiting for you. He won't take his meals. And Krishna's like, oh, I don't want to get my father upset. You know, if Lalita comes and says, Radharani's not going to see you. You've offended her. You were supposed to show up at 6. You didn't show up until 1 in the morning. Can't come in. Right? And then as Rupa Goswami said, we read in Nectar Devotion, Radharani is saying, where are your clothes? And he reinterprets the word. He says, no, my residence is in your eyes. She says, don't ask by your residence, ask by your clothes. He says, I have this fragrance just by being in connection with you. And she says, no, no, where did you spend the night? He said, how could night kidnap? So she gets upset with him, and Lalita says, you can't see her anymore. And Krishna becomes afraid. What will I do? What will I do? I'm going to have to devise some trick. I'm going to have to devise some joke. And he actually thinks like that. He's not thinking, well, I'm God. What's the problem? No. I don't care what Mother Yasoda says. I don't care what my friends say. I don't care what the girls say. I'm God. No, he's thinking, I'm a coward boy. I'm the prince. So this is our understanding. And our Sambandha Abhideyam Prayojana, as Prabhupada explains here, is to understand if I choose, Prabhupada also was quoting at the end of this purport, Yetamam Prapajante, if I choose to surrender to Vrajraj Krishna, if I choose to fix my mind on this intimate form of Krishna, then I will reestablish my relationship in that way. We're very blessed that we have this knowledge. We're really, really blessed that we have this knowledge, and we're most blessed if we use this knowledge and actually meditate on Krishna. Meditate on these pastimes of Mother Yasoda. Absorb ourselves in the sweetness of Vrindavan. Not just have the knowledge theoretically somewhere, but involve ourselves with our desires, our emotions, so that we also enter into this realm of such sweetness. Not only do we forget all of the miseries in this world, as Krishna says in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this is a stage of freedom from all miseries caused by material contact. Not only will we forget the adidaivika, adiatmika, and adibhautika of this world, which is unrelenting, especially in Kali Yuga. Prabhupada says, in Kali Yuga, we're always hit by at least one of them. Sometimes two and three all at once. And you're like, ah! But not only will we forget all of that, like the liberated soul doesn't know if he has a body, like a drunk person doesn't even know if he's wearing clothes, but we will even forget Krishna's majesty. And we'll be absorbed in the drama of Vrindavan. just like Mother Yasoda. What Mother Yasoda is absorbed in is available to all of us. And Prabhupada says, if we take up the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, even to a minute degree, so even if to a minute degree we can imbibe this mood, then we attain prema pumartamahan. As Prabhupada said, the greatest necessity. We need so many things, but the thing we need most is love. Especially this supreme love. So we have just like 2 minutes. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections? Yes?
It said that that Vrindavan, although it's Madhurya, full of sweetness, it actually has more Aishvarya than Vaikuntha. So, I mean, but it's covered by the sweetness.
The sweetness.
So,
it's sweet Aishvarya.
So without the Aishvarya underneath the sweetness, in other words, the tattva supporting the rasa, then really the rasa would become just mundane.
But it's a different kind of Aishvarya. Like it says that Krishna likes to wear gunja berries more than diamonds. You know, it's the kind of Aishvarya that even in this world, a very rich person, they may have their gold-plated, you know, furniture in New York, but they have a country place. They have a country place. You know, and in the country place, the opulence is flowers and fountains and multicolored birds. So they have their city place. Not that they don't have their city place, but the other is it's a different kind of opulence. It's opulence, but it's different. I mean, the dust in Vrindavan is Chintamani. The dust in Vrindavan fulfills all desires. The residents of Vrindavan, they're never interested in that. They're just so absorbed in the sweetness that the opulence of the place is almost irrelevant to them. But yeah, it's a sweet form of opulence. It's a little different. The opulence has a different flavor. Of course, they also have beautiful palaces. I mean, they have buildings made out of jewels, and there's on the base of the trees there's jeweled platforms. And when Lalita sings, the jeweled platforms melt and they reform into another shape. So you know, they have that too. Thank you so much for contributing that. Okay, I think we're going to read Radhigo Yogananda. As I said, I just have a couple sets of books here if anybody wants to get them after the bhajans. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Mother Yasoda ki jai.